Welcome to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Swing and a fly to right and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone! For Eric Thames, and he strikes again.
This is Brewers on Tap.
Davies Wheels and Deals struck him out swinging.
Now it's time to tap the keg with Lane Grindle.
Hello and welcome to episode number 90 of Brewers on Tap. I am Lane Grindle. Good to have you with us for an all-star edition of the podcast this week. It's been a good past week for Brewers baseball. It's been a nice finish to the unofficial end of the first half of the season. Brewers are 5.5 games in front in the NL Central, and they did it with a big finish to this week. Let's pick things up last Wednesday. 4-0 win over Baltimore. Matt Garza tossed 6 1/3 innings of scoreless baseball. Then on Thursday, 11-2 win over the Cubs. It was that one and only game. It was a makeup from May, and the Brewers got out to a 2-0 lead, and then a 7-run third inning just completely took the air out of the balloon in that one. And the scoring started off in that inning with a 2-run home run from Ryan Braun. Brewers ended up scoring 7 runs again in the third inning, added a couple more in the later innings, and ended up winning that game 11-2 over the Cubs. Friday, 9-4 over the Yankees. Jesus Aguilar with a grand slam in that one. 7 total RBIs for him. And Josh Hader came out of the bullpen after a rain delay, and he struck out 7 in relief. Saturday, a 5-3 loss to the Yankees. Brewers led the entire way. Domingo Santana hit a 3-run home run in the first. That was the only scoring until the 7th inning. Yankees got a couple of runs finally against Brent Suter, who went 6 1/3 and gave up just those 2 earned runs. But the Brewers were walked off in the 9th in a 3-run home run by Clint Frazier. It was the only loss this week for the crew, because Sunday, it was a 5-3 win over the Yankees. Travis Shaw delivered a first-inning 3-run homer. Stephen Vogt hit a solo shot for his 4th home run in a Brewers uniform. Again, 50-41 now, the overall record for the crew. 5.5 games clear of both the Cubs and the Cardinals on top of the NL Central. Brewers announced the rotation for the Philadelphia series this weekend at Miller Park. Coming out of the All-Star break, you're going to see Zach Davies on Friday, Jimmy Nelson on Saturday, and Matt Garza on Sunday. The All-Star game, of course, this week, and that was an American League victory in 10 innings by a score of 2-1 over the National League. The Brewers' lone representative in the All-Star game, right-handed reliever, closer, Corey Knebel, he did not get into the contest. Disappointing for Brewers fans, but at the same time, he threw 49 pitches over the weekend against the Yankees. They were stressful pitches as well. It was a couple stressful innings for Corey Knebel. Probably not the worst thing in the world that he was able to rest his arm and get himself set up for the second half of the season. Okay, let's brew up the past.
The pitch to Cooper. Face hit.
Now let's brew up the past.
As we brew up the past, we look back at 1982, the Brewers and their All-Star representative. Since it is All-Star week, the Brewers, of course, in 82, 3 All-Stars at the break. It was Cecil Cooper at first base, Ben Ogilvie in the outfield, and of course, shortstop Robin Yount. I had a chance to ask Cecil Cooper about how special it was to share that moment with a couple of his teammates.
No question about it. I was thinking about that the other day when I saw that the Golden State Warriors are going to have like 4 guys on the All-Star team. I'm like, you know what? We had a whole bunch back then, too. We had the same thing. And it's a good feeling to know your buddy is going to be right there with you.
Remember, the Brewers with those 3 All-Stars, but Pete Vukovich, who was a Brewer, of course, in 1982, won the Cy Young and was not named to the All-Star team. So that tells you just how good that team was. Plenty of guys that could have been All-Stars that didn't make the team that year that either did later in their careers or had earlier in their careers. You also had Raleigh Fingers in 81 that was an All-Star, Ted Simmons in 81 that was an All-Star, Gorman Thomas was an All-Star in 81, Paul Molitor was an All-Star in 80. And those guys were all parts of those teams through that whole run, but of course a big part of that 1982 nucleus. All right, let's break it down with our general manager.
Let's break it down.
Welcome to another edition of the David Stern Show, our monthly installment of our conversation with the Brewers general manager. And as we sit here today, 46-40, six games over 500, and 3.5 games clear in the NL Central as we approach the All-Star break. This is a tremendous place to be in. It's not the finished product, obviously, yep. And you've been quick to point that out, but you have to be really pleased with how everything's come together so far this year.
I am, and I think as an organization, we have a reason to be proud of how we've played for this first half of the season, and we are now past that halfway point. We have a really good chunk of the season to understand what this team is, how this team has played together, how it's come together, how it's grown together, and I think we all have to be pleased about where we are right now. Anytime you're in first place halfway through the season, it's an accomplishment. Obviously, it's not the end goal. We've got a lot of work left yet to get to where we ultimately want to go, which is baseball in October. But this is a step in that direction, and it's a good place to be on June 5th or 6th or 7th.
You kind of alluded to this already in that this isn't a small sample size anymore. This is over half of the season, and you and I have talked a couple of times over the course of the season, and early on, tempering things. Hey, we're playing well now, but there's a lot of baseball left. There's still a lot of baseball left, but there's something here. You have found some things here that are working clearly. And one of the things that, when you're 46-40 and sitting in first place, there's a lot of reasons why. But it seems like one of the overwhelming things is depth. And you've been able to really go out there and find guys that were either blocked in another system or maybe had been given up on, that just needed that opportunity. And that seems to be a pretty good theme up and down this roster.
It is. I think it's unusual for a first-place team to have one All-Star. And that's what we have right now in Corey Knebel, and he's very deserving. But the fact that we only have one All-Star and we're in first place tells me that we have a lot of guys contributing in a lot of different ways, and we're not just a roster that's led by one or two players. And so that speaks to the depth that you talk about. It speaks to some of the contributions we've gotten from players coming up through our system, from some of our minor league free agent signings, from some of our waiver claims. And all of those guys together have produced a team that sits in first place today. It really just hasn't been one or two guys. It's been a full team of 25 or 30 guys that have contributed to where we are at this point.
You're sitting 46-40. You are in first place. And when we've talked in the past, you've said you don't know that there'll ever be a definition of the Brewers being a buyer or a seller. Your goal is going to be to try to improve the organization moving forward. Mark Adonasio has said you have the ability to do what you need to do. If you want to go for it a little bit this year, you can do that. If you want to sit back and see what develops, you can also do that also. And so from that standpoint, I would ask you, is there a middle ground there, though, where you can look at controllable assets beyond 2017 that can also impact 2017? There are a few pieces like that that could be out there on the market this year.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that to the extent we look to add to this current major league grouping of players, we would do so with players who have the ability to be here for years into the future. When we speak of our overarching goal and our long-term goals of the organization, it's to continue to compete year in and year out. And to the extent we can further that goal and also help this current group this year, we certainly have to explore those types of acquisitions. It's not clear that those types of acquisitions are always available. Sometimes the price of those types of players who are available are very steep from a talent perspective. And so we're going to have to weigh all of that as we look at this over the next 2 months. And I know a lot of times people focus on July, but we can make trades into August. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more challenging to do. But really, we have 2 months now to continue to evaluate our major league team, to continue to determine what alternatives are out there and if any of them make sense both for the near term this year and the long term in the coming years as we further our goal of competing consistently in this division.
And you were able to make a move that maybe didn't grab as many headlines as it should have, but you acquired a two-time All-Star in 15-16 behind the plate in Stephen Vogt, who had been designated for assignment, and at least so far it looks like the change of scenery has been the perfect thing for him.
Yeah, Stephen's been a jolt in our clubhouse a little bit, and obviously the production on the field has been certainly a welcome addition. And those are the types of acquisitions that we have to look at. Stephen became available because another team that is not contending this year had a young catching prospect that they wanted to call up and get playing time. And so he became available, and we were fortunate enough to be able to acquire him via a waiver claim. And we think he's the type of guy who can fit into this ball club nicely. And we weren't necessarily looking to upgrade our catching situation. We think that both Jet Bandy and Manny Pena have done really solid jobs throughout the first half of this year. But to be able to add the left-handed bat, to be able to add the veteran presence, we thought was something that was worth doing at this point.
There's two guys right now that, in my opinion, aren't getting enough attention across the country. And you just mentioned one of them. Manny Pena is having really a very fine season behind the plate, doing good things at the plate too, but probably one of the top four or five catchers in the National League this year, if you look at the numbers. And Orlando Arcia, we know what he can do defensively, but the growth that he's made at the plate, I mean, you have to be jumping for joy with what he's been able to do, because it got going with him going to right field a lot, but now he's hitting the ball everywhere.
Yeah, both of those players, the growth and development that they've displayed offensively during the first half of the season has certainly exceeded my expectations. Those are two guys who we knew are very talented defensive players, but probably had steps left to take on the offensive side of the ball, and they've both worked exceptionally hard. They've worked very well with our hitting coaches, Darnell Coles and Jason Lane, and we've begun to see it pay off. And Orlando's been on one of those streaks over the last couple of weeks where it seems like everything he hits is hard and it falls in, and we've seen that translate into some really impressive numbers. And when you talk about the type of defensive player he is, and you add to that the type of offensive contributions we're getting from him now on a regular basis, and you get a really impact major league player, and he's helping us win a lot of games right now.
How amazed have you been at the way Travis Shaw's handled his situation and continued to play about as elite as anybody at third base is playing this year? And all the while, when he's at home, he's going straight to the hospital to be with his daughter. When the games are over, when he's on the road, he's checking in as frequently as he can. Really amazing how he's been able to compartmentalize all of this and handle it with all the maturity that he has.
It is. You put the off-the-field stuff aside, and even what he's done just from a playing perspective, assuming that there were no challenging circumstances, would be really impressive. Mm-hmm. And he's been one of the most consistent players in baseball all year. And then you add on to that what he's dealing with when he leaves the ballpark and what has to be on his mind constantly and going through this with his wife and daughter. It's really remarkable, and I think we all have a tremendous amount of respect for how he's handling himself and how he's caring for his family and still contributing to our team.
You've seen ups and downs from Keon Broxton throughout the year. When he is up, man, there are very few guys in baseball that play the way he can. And then he has those down trends as well. Is that just a byproduct of a guy that basically has less than a season of full at-bats, less than a full season of at-bats under his belt? I mean, you're going to expect some of that, right? And that should start to normalize a little bit as he goes further on in his career?
Over time, we would expect the peaks and valleys to even out a little bit. And Keon certainly, to this stage in his major league career, has been a streaky player. I'm sure he feels that and is striving to smooth that out. But when he gets going, we see the type of talent that he has, and we see the type of impact player that he can be, and he can really take over games for weeks at a time when he's in one of those stretches. Obviously, consistency is the next step, and if we can get him to that point, if he can get himself to that point, we'll be looking at really one of the elite outfielders in the National League.
Another outfielder that last year had to be a very frustrating year for was Domingo Santana. Just couldn't stay healthy, couldn't get into a rhythm because he couldn't get on the field consistently, and there were big expectations for him coming into last year. It seems like this year is what last year was supposed to be for Domingo Santana. He's been very consistent. He's played well in right field, but at the plate, he's come through for you time and time again when you need it.
He has. He's had a tremendous offensive first half, and I think you're right. I think we came into last year and we gave Domingo that right field job, and we were ready for him to take that next step forward in his career. And for a variety of different reasons, we never quite got there. And this year we have, and we've seen a very consistent, very powerful offensive player who can do it in different ways. And he's been a huge force on this team. So it's a credit to his perseverance. It's a credit to our coaching staff. It's a credit to our medical staff. And I think as an organization, it's a lot of fun to see him do what he's doing right now on a nightly basis.
And going around that outfield, we were talking about moves that you could make. You almost made one just by getting Ryan Braun back.
Yep.
That's a pretty good deal to make in the middle of a season to get that bat back in your lineup. Let's go to the pitching staff quickly. Jimmy Nelson's emerging. Chase Anderson was emerging before the injury. I mean, those two guys were establishing themselves as two of the better starting pitchers in the National League. Tough break for Chase. Hopefully get him back and in due time, maybe by August or so. But Jimmy Nelson is really thriving right now. And it is, again, for a lot of reasons, but if you want to pinpoint one thing, he's not walking, guys. His command is much better than it's been in the past.
His fastball command's as good as it's ever been in his professional career, and that dates back to when he was coming up through the minor league system as a big prospect. And he knows it. He's got a tremendous amount of confidence in his ability to throw strikes with multiple pitches right now. That's an enormous boost for a pitcher when you're out there and you're behind an account and you think you can flip in a slider for a strike, or you can pinpoint a fastball where you want it to go. So he's really been outstanding these past 6-8 weeks and certainly leading our staff right now. I agree, he's emerging as one of the better pitchers in this league. I think Chase was on that track as well, and we're looking forward to getting him back and having that really strong and stable 1-2 punch at the top of our rotation.
How do you feel overall about the bullpen? You feel very good about the ninth inning,
I'm
sure, with Corey Knebel. And Jacob Barnes has had a couple of rough outings, but if you take those out, he's been incredibly effective for you, too, in late-inning, high-leverage situations. Carlos Torres looks to be kind of getting himself back into form. Overall, how do you feel about that group, and do you feel like they've made some big jumps from where they were maybe a month ago?
It certainly seems that over the last 3 weeks, that group has relaxed and gotten into a pretty good groove. I think the emergence of Jared Hughes and our ability to use him in some late and close games has really helped the rest of the bullpen fall into place a little bit. And then we've had guys who have come up who have given us some big innings out of the bullpen, whether it was Paolo Espino or Brent Suter when he was pitching out of the pen. And sometimes that goes unnoticed in a lopsided game one way or the other, but when a guy can eat up 2, 3, 4 innings and save the rest of the pen, it allows everyone else to take a day off, get a break, and stay fresh. And really, more than anything else, I think what's helped is our ability to keep some of these guys fresh. Corey's pitched a little less. Jacob's pitched a little less. Oliver Drake has pitched a little less. And when those guys are fresh, they're really good pitchers.
And Josh Hader, of course, was one of the big moves that you made about a month ago, and he's up pitching out of the pen now. As this season goes forward, as you get into the second half now, and you and Craig talk frequently about how you're going to handle some of these situations, will that be one of the things that you look at, is how often you can start to throw him now, or will you be careful with not throwing him on back-to-back days no matter what happens?
It's likely a continued dialogue throughout the year. The step one is, let's get Josh comfortable in the bullpen, and I think we're getting closer to that. He's able to pitch with just a single day off now. He's warming up a lot faster in the bullpen. Whether we get to the point that he's able to pitch back-to-back games this year, I don't know. We'll see how that progresses throughout the second half. We'll see what our bullpen looks like throughout the second half and where Josh fits into that mix. But he's clearly provided a lift for that group. He's a power arm from the left side, and there aren't a lot of those guys in baseball, and he's done a really nice job.
Let's talk a little bit about the minor leagues quickly, and we have to start with Corbin Burnes. Just another 6 innings of scoreless baseball the other night. He was your June pitcher of the month. He had an incredible May. He's just been unbelievable. He's already in Double-A after starting the year in High-A, and that doesn't seem to have fazed him at all. How do you guys watch him? What is your thought on Corbin Burnes? Because he keeps telling you more and more, I can handle this and I can handle that. It's really been amazing to see. A little bit like what Brandon Woodruff was like a year ago.
He's met every challenge we've put in front of him, and we ask him to work on something, and he does, and he improves. And from a player development standpoint, that's what you're looking for. You're looking to put challenges in front of these guys, and then ultimately have them meet them. And Corbin's met challenges about as fast as any player I've been around in minor league baseball. So he's having a tremendous year. We still need to recognize he's a year out of pitching in college, and we need to give him his appropriate time to go through the full developmental cycle. But really exciting to have a pitcher develop this quickly and this well, and to pitch the way he is a year out of the draft in Double-A portends some really, really nice things in the future.
And he's not the only encouraging arm. Freddie Peralta, big strikeout numbers from him. Cody Ponce has been an innings eater. So there's been a lot to like from the Brewers pitching side of things in the minor league system. Garrett Cooper's having an unbelievable year, and I'm sure it's a little bit disappointing for you, not in a bad way, but there's no spot for him up here. He's playing so well, but yeah, with Jesus Aguilar and Eric Thames, there's really not a lot you can do for Garrett Cooper right now. That's a good problem to have if you're in your
it
shoes.
It is, and he deserves some recognition because he is putting up a year unlike too many in minor league baseball. He's taken some real meaningful strides forward this year and firmly cemented himself as a prospect. Mm-hmm. And we speak about the depth of the organization. We don't really know when we're going to need that depth at first base. We're potentially an injury or two away from needing someone like that. So what we communicate to Garrett is just to keep doing what you're doing, and eventually he's going to force his way into the big leagues, and he'll certainly deserve it.
You had Britt Phillips up for a little bit this season. Lewis Brinson's been up for a little bit this season. And both of those guys have done what you want to see when you send them back down. Yep. They have come back down, and they've done nothing but hit the baseball hard and consistently. That's very encouraging.
It is. And both of those guys took both their times here and their subsequent demotions very professionally. And I think they learned a lot while they were here, just in terms of the big league lifestyle, how things work in a big league clubhouse, the pace of game at a big league level, which is faster than at the AAA level. And now they're going back and they're taking those lessons and they're really putting up impressive performances in the Pacific Coast League. So we're going to see those guys back here. We know that they're a big part of this organization, and it's exciting to see them continue to progress in AAA.
First-round draft pick Keston Hira is playing in the Arizona League in rookie ball and DHing and hitting and doing nothing but hitting.
Yep.
He's hitting .483 as of right now with three triples, two doubles, and a home run. He's driven in 11. He's just been incredible at the plate, and he's going through a throwing program at Maryvale to get himself ready to eventually go to Class A in Wisconsin. That's the plan. How close is he to starting to throw and play in the field again and get that promotion to Wisconsin, in your opinion?
So Keston is throwing daily. He's not throwing in defensive drills yet, but he is going through that progressive throwing program where he starts out at 60 feet and then he moves back, and ultimately he'll be at about 180 feet. And then we'll get him participating in defensive drills. And until we see him on the field playing defense, we're probably looking at another month or so. But really, we're going to take this at Keston's pace. It's been a little while since he's thrown, and we've got plenty of time. There's no rush, really. We're thrilled to have him out in the field every day, thrilled to have him hitting, and he's doing exactly what we thought he would.
And news earlier this week, 11 international signings as well from the Brewers, including Larry Ernesto, an outfield prospect that seems to be very highly thought of. Switch hitter, toolsy guy. That's what you're looking for when you're making those international signings.
It is. Any time we're in that international space with some of these younger players, we're really looking at what they can grow into in the future. When you sign and scout a 15 or 16-year-old kid, you have to really think about what is this person going to be like, what is this player going to look like when he's 22 or 23, because that's when he's going to hopefully make it to the major leagues. And with someone like Larry Ernesto, you see the raw talent, you see the athleticism, and we're very excited to get him and all these other players into our organization, get them with our development group, and get their professional career started.
Well, David, we appreciate it. A lot of fun.
It is.
This is a fun time of year as well. It's a busy time. It's always a busy time of year for you, but this one, another especially busy time of the year. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lane. Appreciate it.
David Stearns, Brewers General Manager, with us here on our monthly installment of the David Stearns Show.
Checking in on the farm.
We begin in AAA Colorado Springs. Sky Sox 21 games over 500. They sit at 55-34 on the year. They're in first place in the American Northern Division of the Pacific Coast League. Lewis Brinson's been hot since getting sent back down by the Brewers, sitting .339, 10 home runs, 42 driven in. Brett Phillips, .293, 17 home runs and 66 RBIs. Sky Sox currently in the midst of their All-Star break, the PCL All-Star game coming up on Wednesday night. And so Garrett Cooper
is going to be the representative for the Sky Sox. Why? Because of the year he's having. 366, 17 home runs, and 82 driven in for Garrett Cooper. Lewis Brinson recently played in the Futures game on Sunday in Miami. He went 1-for-4 with a double, and he drove in a run. And the other guy from the Sky Sox that played in that Futures game was Mauricio Dubon. He played for the World Team. He went 1-for-3 with a double. That's not all. He's been providing some offense and some excitement for the Sky Sox since his promotion also.
He rips it in the air to left field. It is hooking, and it will go off the wall on the fly, and around the wall it goes. Dubon at second base, hitting third, on his way home, not even close with the throw. Another inside the park home run for the Sky Sox. The second of the twin bill. This one for Mauricio Dubon. His first AAA home run is an inside the parker. And the Sky Sox pulled it within one at 4-3 here in the bottom of the third inning.
That is Dan Acheson on the call for the Sky Sox. Dubon has only committed one error in his 14 games with the Sky Sox also. On the mound, Taylor Young wins 5-1 with a 2.45 ERA. Angel Ventura's 4-1 with a 3 ERA. And Bubba Derby is 2-0 with a 2.49 ERA. In AA Biloxi, the Shuckers are sitting at 45-43 overall. They are currently sitting at 9-10 in the second half. And they are right in the mix with Jacksonville and Pensacola for the top spot in the second half right now in the South Division of the Southern League. Clint Coulter has 10 home runs to go along with 34 RBIs. Jacob Nottingham was the Brewers' minor league player of the month for June. He hit 317 during the month with two home runs, and he drove in 11. And on the mound, the pitcher of the month for the organization was Corbin Burns. The right-hander now has made 7 starts since getting promoted from the Carolina Mudcats. He is 2-1 with a 1.06 ERA. How about Michael Choice, though?
Here's the 0-1 pitch on the way to him. Swinging a high drive deep towards left field. Goodell looks up and, whoa, kiss it goodbye over Kayavet and beyond. An absolute bomb by Michael Choice. His 4th home run of the season, and it's 5-4 Shuckers.
That is Chris Harris on the call for the Shuckers. Choice has been red hot recently. He had 3 home runs on Monday night, came back on Tuesday night, had another home run. So he's been doing some really good things for the Shuckers. We go to Class A Advanced Carolina. The Mudcats currently sitting at 45-42. They are 9-10 in the second half so far. Trent Clark has heated up recently.
And hitting 9th is Brandon Diaz. Pitch here, Clark swings and hits a high drive. Deep to right, back it goes. Goodbye! Home run for Trent Clark. And the Mudcats lead just like that in the first inning. It's 1-0 on a home run. The 8th this season for Clark.
Clark's average is up to 244. It was down in the low 200s just a couple of weeks ago. He's been hitting over 360 over his last 17 games. He's been red hot, 3 home runs in that stretch as well. It's been good to see Trent Clark get it going for the Mudcats. Class A Wisconsin, the Timber Rattlers are 7-12 in the second half. They sit at 33-54 overall. Tucker Niehaus has 12 home runs. He's driven in 41 on the year. T-Rats, though, just having some struggles. They're very, very young. And that's one thing to remember. That's one of the younger teams in the Midwest League. And they're going to see some more prospects make their way up there from Helena and probably Arizona before the year is all said and done. Speaking of Helena, the Helena Brewers are sitting at 11-11. And the Arizona Brewers are sitting at 11-3. The Arizona Brewers have had first-round pick Keston Hiura hitting for them. He's been a DH. He's not been playing in the field, but he's had an unbelievable start to his professional career. And they welcome Tristan Lutz into the fold. And I had a chance to talk to Tristan before he took off for Arizona.
First off, Tristan, congratulations. I know this is a tough process. The last month has probably not been the easiest of times for you to go through all of the decision-making process. I'm going to guess you're glad it's all behind you now.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, it was It's a little bit stressful, you know, after the draft, kind of having to go through negotiations and being kind of unsure of where I was going to end up. But, you know, I waited it out and everything worked out, and I'm just very blessed and very excited to be a Brewer.
You get a chance to take BP on the field at Miller Park, and that's always a really special thing for everybody. Were there butterflies first time through?
Oh, yes, sir, a little bit. My first round was a little shaky. I was a little bit amped up, but after that I settled in and just kind of did what I know to do and just had a lot of fun. It was a blast and something that I'll never forget.
You get to interact with some of the guys. What were some of the things that stood out to you about things that some of the current big leaguers with the Brewers were saying to you as you were going through that process?
Yeah, it was just, I mean, they're normal guys. You know, they go out there and they do what they love, so a lot of them always have a smile on their face and they're just really happy, and they've really kind of talked to me and just kind of showed me the little bit of, or not showed me, but kind of explained what it is to kind of be a big leaguer and what you need to do. And some people gave advice about how to handle yourself and how to, you know, work your way up through the minor leagues. And, you know, everything, just all in all, it was great. The guys were great, and it was really awesome to meet all of them.
You were a Texas Longhorn commit, and Corey Knebel is a 2017 All-Star for the Brewers, and he played at Texas. Did you seek him out when you got a chance to get into the clubhouse and see the guys?
Yeah, yes, sir. He was one of the first players I met, and he gave me a big hook 'em horns, and it was really cool to meet a guy that went to UT and talk to him. He was a really nice guy, and it was really cool to talk to him.
Being from the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, you're seeing high-level arms at the high school level. Obviously, it's not professional baseball, but you're going to see velocity. You're going to see some big-time guys playing in that area. How do you think that will help prepare you for what your next step is going to be now?
Yeah, I mean, in Texas, I would argue with anybody, it's the best competition around and in this country. So I would say, you know, I think it'll prepare me for future, knowing that I've already seen some of the top talent around the nation. I mean, obviously the players will get better and better, but I feel like it's kind of prepped me a little bit for the ups and downs. Cause I mean, you're not always facing the really subpar people. You're always, seems like you're facing some pretty good arms and you struggle at times some, you know, but I think it'll really prepare me for the future in baseball. Yeah.
You have a lot of power. That was one of the things that people talked about when the Brewers picked you. What are the other strengths of your game that maybe get overshadowed by the power that you show? Sure.
Yeah, I would say that I have a good hit ability too, not just the power. I feel like I'm a good all-around hitter. And then also, you know, defense and my arm strength is something that I've really took a lot more seriously over the last few years. And it's something that's getting a lot better and something that I think is going to be one of the stronger parts of my game as well. So
we're talking with Tristan Lutz, one of the newest members of the Brewers organization. What is next for you? What's your path through the rest of 2017?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm going to Arizona for rookie ball, and then I'll be there until probably the end of the season. You know, I don't know when that is exactly, but I'm there until the end of that, and then I come home, and then if I go to instructs, if not, you know, and then after that, it's just wherever the Brewers want me.
Well, Tristan, we appreciate it. Congratulations. I know this was a big moment for you and your family, and best of luck moving forward.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. It's awesome.
Very impressive young man. How did Tristan Lutz do in his debut for the Arizona Brewers? 2 home runs just a couple of nights ago. Really impressive stuff. One other Brewer did play in that Futures game, I should add. That was Corey Ray. He played for Team USA, and he went 0-2. While Brinson and Dubon both were at least able to collect hits. So very encouraging. 3 Brewers prospects in that Futures game.
Here's what's on tap.
Well, we've been talking about it all season long, and that is the 1982 reunion, and it's finally here this weekend. All 3 days of the Philly series, there's going to be special stuff going on for the Brewers series against the Phillies. Friday the 14th, that's a 7:10 start. First 20,000 fans receive a Paul Molitor replica jersey, courtesy of Experience Fitness. Saturday at 6:10, before the game, fans are going to get autographs from some of their favorite players from that 82 team. And then, of course, Harvey's Wallbangers are back for a special 1982 team reunion and pregame ceremony. And then on Sunday, all fans are going to receive a 1982 AL Champs replica ring, courtesy of Chevrolet. It's going to be a really special weekend.
We hope you'll be able to come out for it. Call 414-902-4000 or visit brewers.com for tickets. Hope to see you out at Miller Park. All right, that is going to do it for me and this week's edition, episode number 90 of Brewers on Tap. We will talk to you again next week as we get the second half of the season underway. Have a good one, everybody.